integrity and the honor and the decision to fight against the Israelis. And they have tried the resistance in Lebanon, and they could not achieve anything. But by the resolution and the resistance gave a chance, gave some time for the government in order to continue its diplomatic power or relations with the Americans and others. But I would say with no pessimism, that the resistance has the right, and I am very optimistic that the resistance can achieve what they want, the freedom fighters, the strugglers for freedom in the South Lebanon, exactly in South Lebanon. They can achieve something I guess nobody has achieved, because they achieved, as okay, your guest said, they achieved victory in 2000, where all the Arab governments, they could not achieve anything.
And that's a very good point. I was going to bring that up later as well. Thank you, Mr. Saleh. And Leila, and I'm glad Mr. Saleh made this point, that it seems all the justification points to the pressure being on Tel Aviv and not on Beirut. Because we have to really ask ourselves, we have to highlight, actually, every time that Hezbollah carried out an operation against the occupation, what was it about? It was either to defend against occupation of Lebanon, to defend against some kind of aggression, or in the latest case, to defend against genocide, the wholesale slaughter by the Zionist entity against the Palestinian civilian population in Gaza. It's always been a retaliatory resistance-type operation to either defend something, protect something, or push something off of land it does not belong on. All the justification is for Hezbollah to remain intact and for the condemnation to be toward Tel Aviv and not vice versa.
Well, you have to understand that when you are called a resistance, you are a reaction to an original action, that's an occupation. So everything that the resistance does, even if it's attacking the occupation anywhere across the world, by the way, according to international, it has to attack it. It has the right to attack it across the world. It's a retaliation to the original sin, which is the occupation. So having said that, they are covered no matter what. Unfortunately, people look at it from a classical perspective, trying to find justifications to the resistance and trying to basically claim that the pressure is now on Tel Aviv to stop this war, etc. No, this is not the case. When you look at the whole situation, unfortunately, in reality, we live in the real world. Most of the nations across us from this region and beyond are siding with the Israeli entity and trying to pressure resistance movements and those who are supporting the resistance movements to back off and allow the Israeli occupation to have a breather. In that sense, the pressure is on Tel Aviv in terms of the possible danger posed against it by resistance movements in this region, especially from Hezbollah and Lebanon and Amal movement, among other basic resistance movements, but also, not only basically from those resistance movements, but also from those supporting them. And in that sense, Tel Aviv is pressuring its allies to go and pressure Lebanon, the Lebanese government, to create a problem for Hezbollah internally and the resistance in Lebanon internally by saying that we have to discuss the matter of your weapons, you have to disarm, and we see politicians within the government and beyond trying to create that pressure. Having said that, you also have to understand another thing. No matter how much they try, under international law, a government has no right, any government, including the local government, has no right to disarm the resistance so long that there's an occupation. And I'll give an example. The Vichy government in France, which used to cooperate with the Nazi occupation of France, used to call the French resistance terrorists. So that's why the international law came about, to support the French resistance. The way I look at it, the resistance in Lebanon at the moment is living what we call a golden chance of actually doing what it needs and what it wants to do without having to look back, because one, everybody around it has taken off their masks. Two, international law is on its side. And three, at the same time, they have taken enough time to reassess what happened and to rebuild. And this is what Sheikh Naim Qassem, Hezbollah Secretary General, said in his most recent interview and his past speeches, and to plan what's going to go ahead. When it comes to Tel Aviv, they're afraid because they don't know the new leadership in Hezbollah and the first-tier leadership in terms of battlefields and the ground, commanders. They don't know who they are. They don't know how they think. They don't know how they act. Hezbollah turned back to the situation of the 1980s when you had an Israeli occupation. Syria was against Lebanon at that time, against the resistance. You had a massive disruption in terms of political powers. They were all polarized. some against the resistance, some pro-resistance. So we're back to that situation. The only difference is that the Israelis have been blocked out of spying on Hezbollah in terms of technology, because Hezbollah went back to that, what you call, plan of 1980s. Now we see the real deal. The Israelis are going to attack, or they continue to actually breach the resistance's social milieu by killing people every day in South Lebanon. You're going to see a reaction later on. But the resistance doesn't act hormonally. It doesn't act emotionally. They act smartly. So that's why they're patient.
We don't have much time left. I really want to get this last question to Mr. Saleh. Mr. Saleh, can you imagine, for years, U.S., its European allies in Israel, they've wanted to disarm many of the resistance groups in the region. They wanted to basically anyone that is hostile against the Israeli apartheid occupation entity, Hezbollah. They want Hezbollah's arms. They want Hamas's arms. They want Islamic Jihad's arms. They want to disarm the Ansarullah. They want Iran's missiles, you very well know, for years now. Tell me, if they were successful in putting an end to all the resistance in the region, what would West Asia look like at that point, and how would anyone counter Israel's expansionism?
Well, I would say if that happened, and God forbids this from happening, I guess the gloomy environment would surround the whole countries and the peoples of the region. But I would say no. They have tried to disarm Hezbollah in 1991, in 1993, in 1996, in 2006, and after that also they have tried a lot. And the Americans were backing the Israelis, and they have initiated many wars, and they failed. And at the same time, they failed in 2024 in order to disarm and invade Lebanon. They have failed in their planning and designing the way to disarm Lebanon, disarm the mentality and the intellect of Lebanon, of having this guts in order to continue their combating the Israelis and to confronting the Israelis. Now, I guess Lebanon, after the martyrdom of the master of the martyrs of the community of the Ummah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, well, once he said, well, the Israelis are fighting people who loves Imam Hussein and loves now Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah and Imam Khomeini and the people of having this this spirit of resistance and the spirit of having this freedom in order to continue their march for a new liberty for the region. I would not expect any kind of this kind of defeat. You have mentioned my brother. I won't see any picture like having the Israelis. They have their problems. They have their social and military and problems even in Gaza, in spite of all these massacres all over Gaza. But they have not defeated the Gazans from resisting this this occupation. Every day in Beit Hanun, in Khan Yunus, anywhere you will find operation that would brightly done by the these stragglers in Gaza. And I guess the Lebanese resistance is as well as powerful and as well as having the decision and having the spirit of continuing the resistance. I am very optimistic about this. They have planned. They have conspired with all the Americans and the Westerns and some of the Arabs. They pressure the resistance. But I will the returning of the spirit of the resistance in this region, from Yemen to Palestine, in Lebanon, even in some parts of Syria, even in Iraq, in the West Bank, all these people, they cannot put them down at all.
Thank you both for joining us. Time has gotten the better of us. Appreciate having you both on. Stay safe to the both of you, Leila Atum, and also Mr. Mohsen Saleh, both joining us from Beirut. And viewers, this brings us to the end of your Spotlight program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
الله الله يا الله 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 يا الله صلي على المصطفى الهادي المجتبى والآل الكرام الله الله يا الله yourself and say what's true. Be yourself though you may be few. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. I changed my goals. Now I realize I was so unwise. Abandoned your advice. Faced with your pride. Help was always near if we persevered. If we held up just for a while. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Salli ala al-Mustafa. Al-Hadi al-Mujtaba. Without you, nothing I've gained is without you. If you are pleased, my soul can breathe. Where would I be without you? My heart now flees these worldly dreams, yearning for mercy from you. Now I realize I was so unwise. Abandoned your advice, faced with your crime. Help was always near if we persevered, if we held up just for a while. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Salli ala al-Mustafa. Al-Hadi al-Mujtaba.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of God, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful, and may great peace and blessing be upon Prophet Muhammad and his household. Assalamu alaikum, dear audience, brothers and sisters, and welcome back to the series of talks for humanity. This is Hamza Azizi. I'm sure you remember that in previous episodes we've been comprehensively talking about different types of communications that human beings could have to each other. The different types of communications that have been drew and designed as ideal communications by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in His holy book. We mentioned that we can imagine different categories of communications, no matter communications of human being in his own personality, regarding his own faculties, if we can mention, if we can name it as a communication technically, and then communication of human beings with other people, beginning with the family, spouses and children and parents, and communications of human beings with relatives, and then we continued with other believers. We said that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in his holy book emphasizes that believers, all believers together, comprise a believer society. So it's the same thing as Islamic Ummah that we normally talk about. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala brings different characteristics and different responsibilities for everyone to take care as a member of the Islamic Ummah and as a member of Islamic or believer society. In previous episodes, we mentioned that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that there are different responsibilities as different types of supports. He says in his holy book that every member of believer society, every mu'min, must take care of the financial support of other believers. And we named and we elaborated different types of financial supports of the every member of Islamic Ummah toward the others, toward each other. And after naming and elaborating different types of financial support, let's open another profile which talks about a different type of support. A different type of support of members of Islamic Ummah is spiritual support. It is something apart from financial support. This type of support also has different examples and different forms. Let's have the extensive explanation and comprehensive explanation about these types of examples after a short break. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad ya muslimin sallu alayhi. My dear audience, brothers and sisters, welcome back to the series of Talks for Humanity. This is Hamza Azizi. We've been talking and we began to open a new profile regarding a new type of support that every member of Islamic Ummah must have and must take care of in accordance with other members of Islamic Ummah. We said that every mu'min has this responsibility to support. Apart from financial support, he has to support other mu'mineen spiritually. So you might ask that what is exactly spiritual support? I said that it has different examples. The first of which is teaching support, or let's say teaching responsibility. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in his holy book in different occasions emphasizes that mu'mineen should not confine the teaching and the learning activities to their own personalities and their own people, their own family members, or their own relatives. No, spiritually, they have this responsibility. Morally, they have this responsibility to teach whatever good thing they learn to the other believers. If I learn something and I believe and I think that it is a beneficial statement, it is a beneficial piece of information, I have this responsibility to teach it to the others. I cannot keep it for my own, so I can I say that, okay, it's something that I have learned. So no, this is something that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that says that this is the slogan of the infidels. You might have heard the story of Qarun. Regarding the financial area, Qarun had a lot of wealth, a very huge wealth. And as soon as he confronted with the people who were asking him to help the poor people, to have some charities, he used to say that, okay, this is something that I have gained by my own effort and by my own knowledge. إِنَّمَا أُوتِيتُهُ عَلَىٰ عِلْمٍ عِنْدِي. I've learned how to earn money, and this is mine, so I do not give this money to anyone, nor I will teach to anyone how to gain such huge wealth. إِنَّمَا أُوتِيتُهُ عَلَىٰ عِلْمٍ عِنْدِي. So this type of characteristic, this type of behavior in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's book is considered as the slogan and motto of people like Qarun. But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that no. The prophet's companions, the prophet's adherents and followers, they do not have such behavior. They do not have such characteristic. They would teach to the others the good and beneficial information. So in any case, if anyone learns a good thing, he has this responsibility to teach to the others. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in chapter Tawbah, verse 122, فَلَوْلَا نَفَرَ مِنْ كُلِّ فِرْقَةٍ مِّنْهُمْ طَائِفَةٌ لِيَتَفَقَّهُ فِي الدِّينِ وَلْيُنذِرُوا قَوْمَهُمْ إِذَا رَجَعُوا إِلَيْهِمْ. But why should not there go forth a group from each of their sections to become learned in religion and to warn their people when they return to them? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that this is an obligation for the people who have traveled and they learned something and they returned. They have to teach to their other people, other believers. Inshallah, we will talk about this issue in the next episode a little bit more. Thank you. Have a good time. Walhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen.
It's all I ever wish for. This life is not eternal, but the next will last forever. Of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Today, Africa did not stand by amid the Israeli and U.S. aggression on Iran. It rose not in silence, but in defiance of these criminal regimes. Now, in a world overshadowed by injustice, why is Africa the one reminding the world what justice really sounds like? For more on how African people have stood with Iran amid the unprovoked Israeli and U.S. aggression against the Islamic Republic, we have contacted Sabir Ahmad Jazbey. Now, he is a lawyer, political analyst, and a human rights activist. We are also joined by Karim Fes Zakari. He's also an editor-in-chief of English News Service, AL24 News, an Algerian public international news channel. For an inside analysis, join us for this week's edition of Africa Today. On June the 13th, 2025, the Israeli regime launched an unprovoked assault on Iran, striking nuclear facilities, civilian infrastructure, and sovereign defenses. The 12-day war that followed claimed the lives of hundreds of civilians, including women, children, nuclear scientists, and military commanders. Now, while Western imperial powers offered silence or support, Africa raised its voice. From street protests to diplomatic halls, a continent long scarred by colonial violence stood united in defiance of aggression. From west to east, statements of condemnation echoed. Governments denounced the strikes as illegal, unjustified, and a direct attack on international law. African civil societies and activists praised Iran's resistance. Pan-African movements exposed the hypocrisy of the West. When a global South nation resists domination, the self-declared defenders of freedom suddenly go quiet. Across the continent, the message is unmistakable. Iran has the right to defend itself, the right to scientific advancement, the right to dignity. Africa has seen this playbook before. Wars of aggression disguised as preemption, sovereignty punished for independence. These are not new stories. These are old wounds that have been reopened. In community halls and in the streets, Africans are taking a stand, not only for Iran, but for a world where power no longer drowns out principle. This is more than solidarity. It is resistance. It is reawakening. So why is it that Africa, so often dismissed, now stands as one of the last true defenders of international law and Iran's right to resist? Julius Malema, a South African politician and Pan-Africanist who is also the founder and leader of the Economic Freedom Fighters Party, has strongly expressed solidarity with Iran in the face of the aggression by the Israeli apartheid regime and the U.S. Let's take a listen.
We stand in full solidarity with Iran, a country under siege from Western imperialism, for choosing independence. We reject the bullying of this nation by the United States, Israel, and its allies. And we stand by their right to defend themselves by any means necessary. Let Israel finally have a taste of the devastation and violence it has perpetrated in Gaza. We are anti-imperialist because we understand that our struggle for freedom is bound to the struggle of all oppressed people across the world.
Now, we'll start off with Mr. Saber Ahmed. We have seen there Mr. Malema saying that Africans reject the bullying of Iran by the United States, Israel, and its allies. It is a strong and clear statement of solidarity with Iran. Now, is this an indication of a new movement where forward-thinking African leaders are taking back the moral right to determine justice and self-defense independently of Western endorsement?
That's a very good question, my brother. If you remember who the aggressor was, who the aggressor is, and who the aggressor remains in this war between Israel and Iran, it was Israel that launched a strike against Iran. That followed with the Iran's rapid response of over 250 drones in one movement against Israel that destroyed the myth of the so-called Iron Dome. And you remember this was followed also by an aggression from America that launched those B-52 bombers to knock out, to allegedly knock out the three power nuclear sites in Natanz and among other areas. What would you expect? What does the world expect Iran to do? To sit down to do nothing? We all know that Mr. Trump desires regime change. We all know that this is the mantra of Mr. Netanyahu. It cannot be allowed for a one-sided perception that Iran is the aggressor, Iran is out to destroy Israel. Iran has never attacked Israel except in self-defense. So it is preposterous to even suggest that Iran is the aggressor. But therefore, when Mr. Malema talks about the right of self-defense, every African civilian in the know supports that thesis, including the likes of Professor Patrice Lumumba and various other scientists, and our own very own president of South Africa, President Ramaphosa.
Now, Algeria's Ministry of Foreign Affairs also strongly condemned Israeli regime's strikes on Iran as a violation of international law, and the UN Charter calling for the UN Security Council to intervene. Foreign Minister Ahmed Attaf, via official channels and press outlets, emphasized Algeria's unwavering support for Iran's right to defend itself based on UN Charter and also Global South values. Now, let's bring in Karim Fes in Algiers. What is the fundamental factor behind Algeria's strong pro-Iran stance?
This position flows naturally from Algeria's own liberation legacy, as you know, having endured French colonial violence for 132 years. Algiers sees every breach of sovereignty as part of the same continuum. Yet, at street level, we can see among opposition figures, for example, in diasporic communities, the language shifts from legalism to moral urgency.
The African Union expressed grave concern on Friday after Israel struck some 100 targets in Iran, including Tehran's nuclear and military sites. The chairperson of the African Union Commission, Mahmoud Ali Youssef, expresses grave concern over reports of an Israeli airstrike on Iran and the ensuing escalation of hostilities in the Middle East, it said in a statement. The African Union is clearly out of touch with the African masses in the issue. The African Union's relatively restrained response to Israel's massive aggression on Iran is seen by some analysts as failure to defend a global South nation under attack.
Now, in a speech delivered in Fez, Abdellah Ben Kiran, Secretary General of Morocco's Justice and Development Party, voiced his solidarity with Iran in defending itself following the Israeli regime's aggression. Now, this is quite significant considering that this was the ruling party of Morocco from 2011 to 2021, and also against the backdrop of frosty ties between Iran and Morocco. Now, Mr. Karim Fes, will the monarchy in Morocco listen to the voices of the masses and abandon shameful ties with their genocidal Israeli apartheid regime?
Well, this is a very complicated and interesting question at the same time. So despite, for example, the rallies that we have seen in Ben Kiran's stirring rhetoric in Fas City, where he insisted saying with Morocco against Iran and with Iran against Israel and so on and so forth. So all this is underscoring Islamic solidarity while affirming Moroccan interests at the same time. So the monarchy's strategic calculus remains unchanged according to what I can see. Morocco's 2020 Abraham Accords tied the United States' recognition of occupied Western Sahara status to security and intelligence cooperation with the Zionist entity, yielding hints of military intelligence gates, access to Israeli tech for counterterrorism, notably against the Polisario units along the Sahara front.
The Pan-Africanist All African People's Revolutionary Party recently released a statement saying, "We stand with Iran." Now, this Pan-Africanist movement condemned Israeli strikes on Iran, labeling them illegal and criminal. Kemi Seba is a well-known activist for his staunch anti-Zionist and anti-imperialist views, and his network has amplified solidarity posts framing Israeli actions as neo-colonial aggression and supportive of Iran's stance. Saber and other Pan-Africanist networks are calling Israeli regime's illegal strikes on Iran also a form of neocolonial aggression. Now, Mr. Ahmad, how does this framing resonate with African experiences of occupation, resource theft, and imperialist warfare?
That's a very good question. Africa has always been the center of colonialism and interference. Africa, so what Kem Seba has been saying is nothing new. We in South Africa have been making this statement since the early 60s, well before that, but actually it crystallized in 60s. If you look at the statements of Robert Sobukwe, Nelson Mandela, and the other stalwarts of the African liberation struggle. What is important for us to note that without Africa, if Africa fell, the Pacific West was, and this was a rhetoric carried throughout the discourse, if Africa swayed itself, would the communist world, then the price of minerals in Africa would obviously be denied to the Western world. And it is for that reason where you had interference of the grotesque nature instigated by the CIA, MI6, MI5, and all the Western intelligence organizations.
Now, thank you for that, Mr. Ahmad. We now take a short break before we continue our program on how Africa is standing with Iran in the face of the aggression by the Israeli regime and the U.S. Stay with us.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back. Kenya's former Prime Minister Raila Odinga has called on world leaders to break their silence and take a stand on the Israeli regime's aggression on Iran, warning of a looming global war. Now, this senior African politician said that Israel had carried out an unprovoked attack on Iran, followed by illegal strikes involving the U.S. He criticized these actions, saying they undermine peace and could ignite wider conflict. Let's take a listen.
We are in on the brink of a third world war. So this is a time when all humanity must come together and prevent a third war from happening. This is not a time to be neutral. It's a time for people to take positions in this. You've seen what has been happening in Gaza. For a long time, innocent people, women, children have been bombed and killed by Israel. All this time, even around this time, many Palestinians are being killed and so on. This is an act that must be condemned. And then now, what has happened today, there was unprovoked attack on Iran. This is the cause of it. People are silent. And provoked attack by Iran, by Israel on Iran. And the U.S. also has followed and bombed Iran. We are saying this is not right. We are telling warmongers to stop so that there can be peace And we need now actually a permanent solution to the Palestinian issue. And the solution is just to have one free Palestinian territory. This is what will resolve this issue here. This is my position as a person. And this is our position also as ODM. 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 ODM.
Well, that's a profound statement by Mr. Odinga, Kenya's former prime minister, calling on the warmongers to stop their aggression. Now, Mr. Karim Fest, what are your thoughts on this?
His framing resonates powerfully in Muslim-majority and leftist African circles, where fears of spillover, food insecurity, jihadist recruitment are actually acute. So yet, maybe across the continent, public and especially state reactions, they may diverge. So Muslim-majority nations, for example, Algeria, Sudan, Egypt, may be vocal. They have these vocal condemnations tying Middle East stability to African security. However, Christian-majority or Francophone states, example, Cameroon, Cote d'Ivoire, they may be cautious when it comes to statements urging restraint without direct blame. Of course, natural pro-Western capitals, example Ghana, Rwanda, they may have this diplomatic silence or generic, let's say, appeals for dialogue. Now, Odinga's de-escalation message, according to what I see it, aligns with widespread popular anxieties.
The Pan-Africanist All African People's Revolutionary Party recently released a statement saying, "We stand with Iran." This Pan-Africanist movement condemned Israel's strikes on Iran, labeling them illegal and criminal. Kemi Seba, a well-known for staunch anti-Zionist and anti-imperialist views, his network has amplified solidarity posts, framing Israel's actions as neo-colonial aggression, supportive of Iran's stance. Kemi Seba and Pan-Africanist networks are calling Israel's strikes on Iran a form of neo-colonial aggression. This assertion resonates with African experiences of occupation, resource theft, and imperialist warfare.
Now, prominent Kenyan human rights lawyer Dr. Miguna Miguna posted a statement on X stating that President Donald Trump is a fascist and by far the most racist and genocidal president the U.S. has had. Now, he added that Trump and Netanyahu are terrorists. This Kenyan lawyer also pointed out that Iran and other countries have the right to nuclear science, technology, and energy programs. Now, in light of ongoing Western double standards, Mr. Ahmad, do you agree with Mr. Miguna's bold assessment and his support for Iran's peaceful nuclear program?
Africa has always been the center of colonialism and interference. Africa has. So what Kemi Seba has been saying is nothing new. We in South Africa have been making this statement since the early 60s, well before that, but actually it crystallized in 60s. If you look at the statements of Robert Sobukwe, Nelson Mandela, and the other stalwarts of the African liberation struggle.
Sheikh Ebrahim Zakzaki, the leader of Nigeria's Islamic movement, says Iran is well within its rights to defend itself from Israeli aggression, blasting Western governments for their silence and double standards on the attacks against the Islamic Republic.
And they don't allow any inspectors to inspect their own nuclear sites, and it's a known fact that they have nuclear weapons, you know, even though they don't declare it. But they don't allow anybody to inspect. Why? What is their business now attacking Iranian nuclear installations? And what is more, they also, by covert operation, assassinated military and leaders and scientists and university dons in their own residential areas, in their own homes, in the residential area. The clear attack on residential area, not military at all. You can't attack a scientist in his house and call it military. It's a science thing. Even if general staying in his house is not a military target. Now they murdered these people in cold blood.
The Nigerian government also strongly condemned the Israeli regime's provocative aggression on Iran, labeling it an escalation of hostilities and called for adherence to international law. Nigeria is one of the few African countries to openly condemn the Israeli regime. Now, Mr. Karim, do you see this as a subtle shift in the country's foreign policy?
Well, the language closely parallels Algeria's own UN-centered appeals, as I have mentioned earlier. However, this strong wording must maybe a calibrated realignment, let's say, rather than a wholesale foreign policy overhaul. Nigeria, Africa's demographically largest state and home to over 50% of Muslims, must balance domestic religious pressures with long-standing security and trade ties to the Zionist entity and the U.S. for that matter, while publicly siding with the Global South consensus. Abuja signals leadership in non-aligned forums without maybe jeopardizing critical intelligence, cooperation, military assistance, or diaspora remittances from the Zionist entity. So three, perhaps, drivers can explain the shift that we can see with this country. Domestic mobilization, perhaps the grassroots protests and influential Islamic groups that are demanding solidarity with Iran as part of the broader Muslim majority sentiment.
The Pan-African Pyramid and Pan-African Movement Uganda chapter formally visited the Iranian embassy in Kampala, issuing a strong statement condemning Israel and the U.S. as aggressors. In it, they declared solidarity with the Iranian people and framed the conflict as a fight against universal injustice and imperialism. A child buried in Gaza, Tel Aviv, or Tehran is equally worthy of mourning. Genuine peace is born not from bombs, but from honest dialogue, justice, and truth.
Now, Mr. Karim, you have the last word. With movements in Uganda and elsewhere declaring solidarity with Iran, and in our seeing the U.S.-Israeli aggression, are we witnessing a rebirth of an Pan-African movement, anti-imperialist foreign policy rooted in historic non-alignment in Africa?
Very good question indeed. So the Pan-African Pyramid and Uganda's Pan-African Movement delegates visited Iran's embassy in Kampala, denouncing the Zionist entity and the U.S. as aggressors, and they were proclaiming solidarity with the Iranian people. A child buried in Gaza, Tel Aviv, or Tehran is equally worthy of mourning. So this symbolic act, let's say, resurrects the very founding ethos, linking, for example, the African liberation struggles with global anti-colonial movements. Of course, state responses across Africa may remain uneven. While Algeria, South Africa, and Nigeria have issued pointed condemnations, capitals such as Rwanda, maybe Ghana, still maintain diplomatic neutrality, issuing bland calls for restraint, and Kenya perhaps limits itself to citizen safety, advisories, and so on and so forth. So the strength of this revived non-aligned impulse lies in this burgeoning, let's say, online networks, university campuses, and youth coalitions that frame Middle East conflicts through African liberation paradigms.
Well, thanks for that. Unfortunately, our time is over for now. I'd like to thank our guests, Saber Ahmad Jazbai and Karim Fes Zakari, for their incisive analysis. That's it for this week's edition of Africa Today. From me, Mubarak Kenya, and the entire crew, it's goodbye for now.
Greetings, dear listeners. This is Iran Radio from Tehran, the beautiful capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And here's what's awaiting you on your radio station. Don't miss a beat. First, we have a new segment of radio productions. We hope these diverse and engaging pieces have provided you with enjoyment and insight throughout our broadcast. As we continue, we return to the profound wisdom of Imam Khomeini. May Allah bless his soul with the spring of truth. Following that, we dive back into another segment of radio productions. Then we open the gate of knowledge. Sheikh Mustafa Mukhtar will explain and illustrate the profound moral, ethical, spiritual, and social teachings found within the Nahjul Balagha, a perfect way to continue the day with profound wisdom. After this, we have Round the World with reporters. Coming up next, another exciting chapter from our radio productions right here on Iran Radio. Don't go anywhere. In the vast sky of Iran's history, certain names shine like brilliant stars. Names that, through steadfastness and devotion, have earned not only victories on the battlefield, but a place in the hearts of every Iranian. The commanders of this land from ancient times to today have always stood as symbols of resistance, courage, and sacrifice. Relying on faith, knowledge, and a deep love for their homeland, they have confronted every threat and defended the honor and integrity of this nation. Commander Ghulam Ali Rashid is one of those immortal names, a man whose presence on the battlefield struck fear into the heart of the enemy and whose patriotic zeal served as an unbreakable shield for his country. A time life spent defending Iran and its ideals ultimately culminated in his martyrdom during the Zionist regime's aggression against Iran. His name is now recorded forever in the scroll of this land's glory. Born in 1953 in the city of Desfoul in the southern province of Khuzestan, Ghulam Ali Rashid stepped onto the path of jihad from an early age. His political activities against the Pahlavi regime reflected the determined will of this remarkable man. Before the victory of the Islamic Revolution, due to his anti-regime actions, he was arrested and transferred to Ahvaz, where he served a 9-year prison sentence. That prison term became a turning point, bringing him into contact with prominent figures such as Mohsen Rezai and Ali Shamkhani, who would later become senior commanders in the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, IRGC. In 1976, he was arrested again in Isfahan and transferred to Tehran, spending yet another year in prison. But even prison walls could not contain his resolve. Upon release, he resumed his struggle with renewed strength on the front lines of truth against tyranny. Following the establishment of the IRGC, Ghulam Ali Rashid began his service as the Deputy for Intelligence and Operations in the Desfoul IRGC. During the Iraqi Ba'ath regime's imposed war against Iran, he rose to become one of the Iran's senior commanders, playing a pivotal role in many major operations. Beyond his military service, Commander Rashid was also a leader in the realm of knowledge and education. He held a master's degree in political geography from the University of Tehran and a PhD in the same field from Tarbiyat Mudarris University. He also served as an associate professor and faculty member at both the Supreme National Defense University and Imam Hussein University, training generations of future defense scholars and officers. Elevated to the rank of Major General, he was appointed Deputy Chief of the General Staff of the Armed Forces, and he also served as Deputy for Defense Affairs at the Secretariat of the Supreme National Security Council. And finally, the proud culmination of this honorable path was the martyrdom that testifies to his ultimate level of loyalty and self-sacrifice. On the morning of Friday, June 13, 2025, Commander Rashid attained martyrdom in a cowardly Israeli missile strike on Tehran, sacrificing his life in defense of the homeland he had so long protected. Throughout decades of service, his record was one of wisdom, leadership, and unmatched bravery. As one of the chief commanders of the sacred